Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefrey, and this is episode number 219. I want to thank you for each of you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that share, like, comment. It just helps me spread the message, and ultimately that's why I do this, is just to try to get back to the coaching community. I also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically VersaPulley, for bringing this episode to you for free. Only partner with brands and groups that I use, I appreciate that have the same mission to try to give back, and VersaPulley is definitely one of those companies. This week I'm joined by Jake Schuster. Jake is the assistant strength coach works with the track and field program at Florida State. Just got that job. Most recently has been with USA Field Hockey and a plethora of places. But man, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Coach. This is the podcast that inspired me to start my own, so you're my hero in that regard. So it's a real honor to be here.
Oh, I appreciate that, man. Well, you've worked a handful of places. I mean, we talked about Florida State, which is coming. You got USA Field Hockey, New Zealand Rugby. You grew up as a wrestler, lacrosse athlete. Out of those experiences, which one do you point to being, what motivated you to become a strength and conditioning coach that decided to go in this field and maybe best defined you as a coach?
Well, I became a strength and conditioning coach because I kept getting injured in sports and college wrestling specifically, and wanted to figure out why. So I studied nutrition, I studied, weightlifting and things like that. But the experience that I would say formed me as a coach the most was my time in New Zealand, because I had to make the most of a limited amount of time in which I was able to coach. So I was just a cog in a big machine, and I was working under Dr. Matt Kritz there with the New Zealand Women's Sevens program specifically, and I got to, for my own PhD research, design and deliver their Wednesday session, so their Wednesday power session, which involved lifting and sprinting. And so knowing that I had about 2 hours a week in which to make an impact made me really be in the present. And I think as young coaches, we can get caught and a bit of a cycle of always thinking about what's next or what we need to do to further ourselves, and think about programming and all these things that are out there, rather than just looking at the athletes right in front of you and how you're going to coach in that moment. So that experience forced me to really make the most of every rep that I had.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And that's something that's often overlooked as coaches, but it's ultimately what we run into. In every situation, we're all faced with limitations, be it time, be it resources, be it whatever. And, you have kind of what you think, is the right way of doing things. And then you have the way that you have to do things because of logistics or whatever.
Right.
We'll dig into that a little bit deeper. But before we do, along the way, you've made, mistakes.
Yes.
What was one of the biggest mistakes you made and kind of how you learned from it?
Coach, I'd just say any time that I've ever thought that I knew better than someone who is older than me. I think elders are they are where they are for a reason. I know Coach Jeremy Shepherd loves to say, respect your uncles, and I really like that. And I think, whether it was when I was interning under Eric Cressy or when I was working in New Zealand under Matt Kritz or anywhere else I've been, really that I've had a boss in my department, anytime I ever thought I might know better than them, even if in the very end I wasn't wrong, which 99 times out of 100 I was, it was just the thought, just the attitude coming in that way, that you just learn humility as you get older, I think, as you mature.
Yeah, I think there's, I always tell my kids that, I've walked down the path that you're walking. So,
right.
try to understand that, but there's a good balance there between having confidence and sometimes, having the wherewithal to be able to express, your views and all that, but there is that balance of humility and respect and realizing that you don't have all the answers yet, you know, and you're starting to figure out how to ask the right questions. And I think that's just a natural progression of coaches, you know, and I think that's but having the ability to point that out in yourself, I think is very, very strong. Your PhD work was specifically in speed and power. And, you know, it's a topic that, you know, gets, you know, those are two terms that get thrown around pretty regularly. And, you know, defining that even is sometimes difficult. But what are some of the things that you see being done wrong when it comes to a speed and power per se?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, the obvious one is just doing a lot of drills and a lot of fancy drills. I mean, I think the best way to train speed is to sprint. Yeah. Have an educated coach watch you sprint and then give some feedback and then sprint again.
Right.
You know, I mean, look, skipping, hopping, bounding is wonderful, productive, important. But a lot of people think, oh, if I go do this dribble variation that I saw on Instagram, my athletes are going to get faster. Well, if they're not actually sprinting alongside it or, you know, getting feedback on their running form, you know, from a good coach, then they might not get faster.
Right. Right. I think what I often see, and tell me if I'm wrong, is it's not so much even the fact that they're not sprinting. You know, it's often the fact that we're doing too much sprinting or we're doing,
yes,
you know, too much of the additional stuff. You know, what are,
yeah,
when it comes to, you know, maintaining a very efficient CNS and being able to call upon that power in a state of readiness, you know, what are some of the things that we can be doing as coaches to make sure that we're prepared for those moments?
That we have the CNS firing?
Yeah, that we've trained in a way that we're able to efficiently, like you talked about earlier, call upon, mm-hmm, you know, our motor units and the CNS and you know, to where we're not in a constant state of fatigue. And I think, yeah, the obvious answer is obviously don't do as much, but what's the right balance there?
I see. I mean, the easy thing to say is nail the 23 hours that we're not training a day or so. But also, I think making everything as specific and applied as possible. So making everything competition, making things a potential failure instance. So, you can call it constraints-based training, you can call it dynamical systems, whatever you want. But setting things up so that an athlete does the exercise correctly or does it successfully in a manner that we would want them to during competition, or else they fail. And they fail in a way that we don't have to tell them that they failed. They know it. So I find that doing simple races or chasing one another or just practicing match situations. So like in rugby, starting at the 22-meter line and running to try and score a try and having a defender come at you from different angles. And that's evasion training. That's multi-directional running training rather than just using cones and things like that. So just making things as realistic as possible. I think we find that we can get away with doing so much less when we do that. So it's not necessarily about, you know, more or less work and examining that and trying to fine tune that. But we just see that if we do things in a really realistic sport-like manner or in a specific manner, that we'll notice pretty quickly when we pick up the skills and then when we've stopped getting something out of training. So we'll know when to stop.
You're going into a situation at Florida State where you're going to be a brand new coach. You're in a sport that measures everything. You know, what are you going to do right away from an evaluation standpoint to get the information that you need outside of their times or their distances or whatever it may be,
sure,
so you can create a solid strength power profile?
The first thing I'm going to do is sit back and observe and try and learn as much as I can without interfering for at least the first few weeks, not the first few months. Second thing I'm going to do is ask the coaches questions until they tell me to go away. And then the third thing I'll do is I'll try and do what I've done in my own research, which is force velocity profiling. So I'll try and find force and velocity metrics of our athletes across their certain events. So if they're jumpers, I'll have them jump. If they're sprinters, I'll have them sprint. If they're hurdlers, then they'll do both. And that way, I think besides just what you know, the proverbial stopwatch can tell us, we'll have some other KPIs to work with. So maximum velocity, how quickly do we get to maximum velocity? How efficiently are we applying forces in the accelerated phase? Things like that, that I think we can use as benchmarks across the season.
You said you'll have your sprinter sprint and your jumpers jump. And if you already have those, you know, those numbers by the fact that they're producing those in competition, is there other things that you'd be doing besides that to, you know, I mean, are you doing mid thigh pulls? Are you doing,
I see.
You know, things along those lines to really kind of dig into being able to identify where their strengths and their weaknesses are?
At the risk of sounding too niche or biased, Coach, I think it will come down to the profiling for me. So whether it's with the radar gun or the MySprint app, which colleagues in Spain developed, doing that force velocity profiling, you know, it will give us the metrics like what's the peak force output in their first step or in the jump, what's the maximum velocity that they're able to get to. So no matter what, you know, for example, 100 meter time they're getting, if they go from topping out at 9 meters per second and we can get them to 10, you know, or if we know that they're only at 9 and they should really be at 10, then we know what drills to focus on and where to be working on. And maybe therefore we start doing some overspeed work and we know, you know, what end of the spectrum to focus our training on. So I think those kind of things can be diagnostic. In terms of like the strength and the power testing and things like that, I'm actually not too fussed. I think especially in a sport like track, the coaches know what they like and they know what they trust. So I'm happy to stick with what they know there. And then I'll dive into the research and whatever it is, whether it's mid-thigh pull or just looking at a close grip snatch, for example. And, right. And if that's what they hang their hat on, then I'll do some research in those areas and figure out how we diagnose and how we program training from there.
You know, most strength coaches at this point, especially in the U.S., they, you know, if they've been in it for any period of time, they've typically gone through a GA where they've had a bachelor's and a master's degree. You just got done, or you're still working on your PhD, about to finish up. But I think there's a big gap there that exists a lot of times between the knowledge that you have in education from that master's degree to going through the process of obtaining a PhD and the research that goes along with it and the internal growth that happens. You're a smart guy. I mean, obviously we're talking about some things at a really high level when you're talking on force velocity, you know, velocity profiles and things along those lines. But there was a point back when you're like, you didn't even know what that was. You know, how did you go about kind of, you know, what would be your advice for a young coach that feels like they got a good, pretty good baseline knowledge, but they really want to get advanced like that? You know, was it digging into the journals? Was it finding a mentor? Was it, you know, what was it for you?
No, that's a really good question. I think, finding a mentor, and not even necessarily someone who's, you know, kind of a king of the castle professor, but maybe just a young researcher who's, I mean, similar to where I am, you know, back in PhD or maybe a couple years further down the line, postdoc or in the industry with a specialization, and offer your services, because, you know, we can always use a pair of hands, and say that you want to learn about that niche area, and can you be of help? So, you know, for example, when I'm writing my papers, I need someone to, I'm terrible at stats, so I need someone to run the stats. I need someone to look up a few things along the way. And so you can offer something up, because one thing I think that people are realizing is that just writing out a ton of emails asking to pick someone's brain is not going to get you very far. That's not offering any value to the person you're contacting. Right. So if you can offer yourself to be a part of the work that that person is doing, then they're inclined, you know, to obviously offer you the value of teaching you about that area. So, you know, similarly to, you know, when I went an intern for Eric Cressy, I wanted to learn about the shoulder and throwing and rotational sports. And I learned an incredible amount in that area and was providing, you know, reciprocal value to Eric by working in his facilities and training the athletes there. And so that's how those things work. So honestly, to answer your question, I think when people want to add advanced knowledge, find someone who is in that niche and find how you can offer them value.
Yeah, it's one of the things, and one of the reasons why I started the podcast was I wanted to seek out the experts in specific areas, you know, and the innovators, and really dig in and ask questions and dive deep into specific areas. And I think that's the key critical element, is you gotta be vulnerable enough to allow yourself to say that I don't know it all, that I'm, you know, and then just go seek out the people and ask questions, you know, and some people will tell you no, but most people will tell you yes. And if you can add that reciprocal value somehow, some way, it's an easy yes for most people that are busy like us, you know?
Agreed. And I'd also suggest you saying that made me think, Coach, I think people should really pick an area and dive into it, because so many folks are keyboard experts. Like I went for a coffee with an undergrad who reached out to me the other week, and he didn't have a niche area. He didn't even know if he wanted physiology or biomechanics or strength and conditioning or medicine. But he was up to date on all the gossip and who was putting out what paper and all this stuff. And I said, that sounds exhausting, right? You know, like being on Twitter all day. Go pick a niche, pick an area that you're really going to become an expert in, and take your time with it.
I agree with that 100%. And then, you know, that doesn't mean that that's the area that you got to stay in.
Exactly, you know, yeah.
But become an expert somewhere so that you can bring value to a situation and then grow from right there. I agree with that. You mentioned earlier that, you know, my podcast was one of the things that kind of, you know, motivated you to do your own. And I think that that's fantastic. That's one of the things that I hope that I would be able to do with this podcast. Talk a little bit about the reasoning for Well-Traveled Wellness Podcast and the name and the direction that you're trying to go with it.
Well, it started as a travel blog and really kicked off into a podcast, mostly because when I finished my master's at Loughborough and thought that the world was going to open up to me, there were almost no jobs to be found. Right. So I said, oh, well, why don't I start this instead and you know, run a little online business for a half year. And, you know, it came off of what we just mentioned. So is that I didn't feel comfortable just reaching out to people and quote unquote picking their brains anymore. I didn't feel that was fair to people, to their time. So I wanted to try and offer them value by hopefully helping to give them a platform and an audience from which to grow their own profile, or at least just to share their knowledge, you know, recognizing that not everyone goes and reads every paper or, you know, knows what's happening in certain setups, but people can in the kind of safe environment go and talk about what they do and what they offer the field. So that was my motivation. I wanted to, just like you, talk to a lot of experts and learn from them. It's turned into an incredible networking tool. I feel a bit guilty, you know, at the network I've built from doing it. But, you know, it's also just incredibly fortunate. The direction it's going, as people have probably noticed, it's had a few month hiatus. I've been rebranding. It's going to be called Voyager Sport now, after my own voyage and traveling and working in different places. And also, I think the Voyager spacecraft are some of the coolest things that NASA or humanity has ever done. They've gone farther than anyone else without making much fuss about it. And that's something I kind of strive to do. It doesn't come naturally to us Americans, no fuss, but that's what inspires me. So Voyager Sport will be up and released. I think episode one is Alex Wolf from the EIS. So that'll be up probably by the time you publish this.
No, that's fantastic.
Thank you.
We finished the podcast with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
I'm going to have to give two. So one is from Coach John Kiley, and he gave one. I interviewed him, and I'll actually be publishing that soon. And he said the best program or the best philosophy is whatever will best serve the athlete right in front of you. I really like that. And the other best piece of coaching advice I received was from Nick Winkelman when we were when I was out in Phoenix, and he mentored me on writing the training intervention for my PhD project. And he said, you know, we have to find what works best for our athletes. So it's a very similar piece of advice. And he just said, you know, everyone's familiar with his work around cueing, of course, and on how we talk to our athletes. But the way he said it to me just helped me realize that we really have to drag ourselves as coaches out of our own heads and into the space where we are with the athlete in front of us and give them exactly what they need to facilitate them having, you know, the best experience and getting the most out of their session.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. Well, man, this has been great. I think, you know, one of the things that stand out to me about you that I really respect are the fact that, you know, when you talk about your journey, you know, you never really just sat on your hands, you know, and like a lot of young strength coaches do. They sit back and they wait for, they're reactive. They wait for things to kind of happen. And you're a guy that kind of always, I mean, whether it's starting a podcast or go getting your PhD in New Zealand or doing whatever, I think you're a guy that just kind of like knows who you are, wants to, you know, takes action And then, you know, most recently, obviously, you know, you waited essentially for the right opportunity. You didn't wait, but you actively looked for the right opportunity for you to use your skill set in the best way. And going to Florida State, working with track and field, with your background, educational background, with your unique life experiences, I think is a really cool thing. And I think a lot of coaches can take that away from you. And, you know, by listening to your podcast and doing things like that, I think they can grow in a very similar way. So I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing, man.
Thank you so much, Coach.
Awesome.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest as well as our sponsors for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefree.com where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefree's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefree in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefree can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefree, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefree. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.